This is The Think Tank with Dr. Mike O'Neill, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
Okay, so you want to run for office. We've talked to a lot of politicians here, but never much talked about the process or some of the people who've dipped their toes into the process of running for office. We have several guests here. I'll introduce the latter two later on when we bring them on, but our initial guest is Beth Meyer. Beth runs an organization called Leading for Change, and you're involved with this. You train candidates?
Candidates that are really engaged in wanting to advance progressive issues and values, which in short means that they're really committed to making sure that all people, no matter zip code, no matter race, no matter gender, etc., have access to equal opportunity, which is very different than just saying equal opportunity. So you have to have the access in order to take advantage of that. So people that have gone through our program, we have 41 people that have gone through our programs and a combination of some others in Arizona that are now in office everywhere from Justice of the Peace, School Board, Legislature, Secretary of State, and even Kathy Hoffman. But what's very interesting is in age, the people that come through our program are anywhere from 18 to the oldest that we had was about 73 years old. The younger ones are really coming in to learn, what do I need to do to really prepare to run for office, knowing that I'm only 18 and I'm not going to run yet. The older ones have been mostly working and engaged in social justice work, even if it's as a volunteer. And I say even if, I'm not discounting it, it's very hard work. But now they have the time, because a lot of them are preparing to limit their hours. So it's very exciting. And 45% of the people that have gone through our programs are people of color. And interesting enough, 68% are women.
Now, you say you work for those who are progressive. Sounds like there's an ideological litmus test for who you will work with.
Well, we are nonpartisan, but we do let people know that the vision and values of Leading for Change as an entire organization, which has more programs in addition to candidate training, are really devoted to people that are, again, into making sure that we move laws and policy forward that give an access to having equal ground for moving forward where they want to go economically, educationally, etc.
I'm guessing, despite the nonpartisan description, you're talking with that kind of mission statement, you're talking an overwhelming proportion of Democrats.
Well, you can guess.
Well, I don't think I'd be wrong, would I?
that's funny, but here's the thing. We don't ask people what their party is.
Uh-huh.
The law actually prohibits us from doing that.
Uh-huh. Are you a 501c3 nonprofit?
501c3.
Which means you have to be nonpartisan.
That is correct.
And because that 501c3 is the kind of nonprofit to which people can make charitable deductions.
That is correct.
Contributions, which are deductible.
Right.
501c4 does politics and it's not deductible.
Right. And they will endorse candidates. Mm-hmm. We do not.
Even your own?
We do not even endorse our own.
Okay, so you're about training and education.
Yes. And you know, it's funny that you say that, Mike, because sometimes what will happen is we will actually have people that have gone through our program and are now candidates, and they're actually running against other people that we have trained.
Oh, really?
Yes. And so what we feel good about is that they're leaving, they left our training, and we know that they are equal in their values. What might make them different and what makes every candidate different is how they move forward in their work. How do they deliver their message? who are they delivering their message to? And then when they're in office.
Now, when we started doing this show, I started to look around, do a little bit of research to find out what kinds of similar other organizations there are. One that I ran across is called Emerge Arizona.
Right.
Sounds pretty similar. How did they differ?
Okay. Emerge Arizona is a very, very good program. But Emerge Arizona only trains women.
But you were 2/3 women, so there's a lot of overlap.
But that's by, miss, right? The last class that we just graduated about a month ago was not all women. It was actually almost mostly men. I was giving you the broad longitudinal tracking numbers that we do. But Emerge only trains women and only trains Democrats. And I believe that they also need to be pro-choice. I know that Emerge America insists on that, and I'm pretty sure the one in Arizona does.
Do you have that prohibition as well, the pro-choice?
I don't go down that road with them.
Okay.
But when we're talking about access and everything, that's healthcare, and that's up to the candidate.
Okay. Okay. So on the more Republican side, I was trying to think of who, what I know of. The closest I came up with is Constant Quinard seems to do stuff like this on his own. He's a Republican consultant who has been here. Are you familiar with what he does?
No, I'm not.
Okay. I know this third hand basically through reading. He administers a questionnaire, which is absolutely a litmus test. If you want me to work for you, you have to adhere to certain things. And it's Republican, it's conservative, and it's really interesting from the standpoint of usually you think of consultants who are going out looking for work. He kind of flips the roles and says, if you want me to take you on, here's my litmus test. If you don't pass it, I'm not going to help you. And he's worked with a significant proportion of the Arizona legislature. So.
Well, just something interesting to know. Before I was with Leading for Change, I was with an organization called Center for Progressive Leadership. They had a candidate training program that I introduced to them as well. We were in about 6 to 8 states, and then a fellowship similar to what we have now. But here's what's very interesting. At that time, we were able to find out through research that the conservatives, I'm not even saying what party, I'm just saying conservatives, put $70 to $90 million a year into training. The progressives put in less than $7 million. And I believe that number has gone. Mm-hmm.
So talk to me about your curriculum. What do you cover?
Well, the first thing that we cover is, are you sure you really want to do this work? Because being a candidate, as your next guest will share with you, is basically a full-time second job. So we want to make sure that people really understand that they are ready to take this role on, because their family members and good friends, if they're not working with them on their campaign, will eventually become strangers to them while they're through the campaign. Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing.
I'm guessing high up there is also going to be, how do you feel about asking for money?
Very high up is, how do you feel about asking for money?
As in, are you willing to do that?
Yes. But I will tell you, there are people that, like I said earlier, because of the age gap, there were people that come in and really understand a lot of this stuff, and we train on all of it. But what we do is make them think, because if somebody wants to run for the Arizona legislature, where you're going to make $24,000 a year, and you don't have a job that will allow you to work part-time.
And $24,000 a year and a demand structure that is going to preclude you from many, many types of work.
That's exactly where I was going. You took the words right out of my mouth. Well said. And so some people that have a young family or even planning to start a family realize, I need to learn more about this. I need to get more involved in working on campaigns. But for my own candidacy, I need to put that off until I'm in a position.
So you've walked through people to that.
Yeah,
through
that
change.
Help them understand that. I mean, and then if you're looking at a school board member who I think is holds one of the hardest jobs anybody can hold, is being a school board member. there's no money there, but a lot of hours and a lot of
Well,
work.
And to presage, we're going to break here for just a moment, but one of the people we will talk to is one of your graduates who is, in fact, a school board member. But we will be back with Beth Meyer and two other guests when we return in the Think Tank in just a moment.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We're talking to Beth Meyer of Arizona Leaders, Arizona Leading for Change, that, among other things, does candidate training. We're talking about your curriculum. And to summarize what you said, the first thing you do is screen people, basically, or get them to screen themselves. Are you really up for this? Then we talked about, are you okay with asking people for money? Because we all know you have to do that. What else? Oh, in the killer time scale, what is this job you're thinking about going to look like in terms of its time commitment profile, and in the case of the legislature, the pay, which can be a hit.
Exactly. That is correct. So once we work through that and people work through that and take it even home, because we do give a questionnaire and go over it with their loved ones to say, are we really, because it is a we.
Are we up for this as a family?
Are we up for this as a family? Exactly. And then we really start going heavy into the training. So the training, like the first thing you said, is you ask them if they're comfortable with fundraising. Some people have done fundraising before, but they're not strong enough. Others have never done it before, and that creates fear. And so we train on fundraising and how to fundraise, because as you know, particularly in today's market, you must know how to fundraise. And so we train them, how do you identify who you're going to ask? How do you determine what the ask is going to be? And one of the ways we get comfortable, we get our participants comfortable with asking for money, is having them work on what does money mean to them personally? 'Cause I came from a very, very low income family. But my mom and dad made it clear to me, you never ask anybody for money. So here I am today, and I'm working for a nonprofit and worked for nonprofits.
So you got to deal with your own head first.
I got my mother on one shoulder and my dad on the other. Ooh, saying, did we not teach you? You never ask people for money. And so anybody going through these types of programs, not just ours, when it comes to fundraising, it's one of the things that makes them nervous. But you get over it. So we teach them fundraising, message development and delivery. Targeting. How do you target? How do you market? What's your win number? Number one, if you do not know your win number, you cannot make a plan to determine how you're going to meet that win number, particularly, of course, if you have a primary.
Mm-hmm. A win number being the amount you have to raise in order to have a chance.
The number of votes you need to get win.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In order to win. Also, the big thing is, how do you recruit? And how do you manage volunteers? And then always the elephant in the room about that, based on people that had worked on campaigns before, one of the big questions is, how do we get rid of a volunteer that we're not happy with?
Ouch.
That has become a cancer in the campaign. Uh-huh. So we work through those very, very important questions.
There's some head nodding going on in the room.
We have some of our elected officials.
You said something that
was
a familiar territory,
right.
I guess.
And the other thing is, and we even see this in the debates going on, you have to be very clear on what your vision is. It's very easy to say, I want to make change. But you need to look at your constituents. It's not just about you. It is about your constituents. You are going to run and be elected, if you win, hopefully, right, to represent those people. So you need to understand not only your vision, but their vision. Not only your values, but can you live with their values and move the needle forward to create the change that your constituents need to live a safer, more productive, less angst life. So it is 3 weekends of training. It's pretty in-depth. There's homework that goes home with them. They actually fill out they work on for those 3 weekends. We call it our candidate plan.
and it's their plan.
I'm thinking questions like, how much time do you actually have available to commit to this? What resources?
It's a biggie because, as we tell the candidates, you really are going to have two main jobs: knocking on doors so that your constituents get to know you, and dialing for dollars.
Which, even at higher levels, Congress and Senate, the biggest complaint among elected officials is they spend half their life on a phone.
It is unbelievable, and it is very, very true. And so when you're running for office, particularly the first time, and if you have a huge amount that you need to raise, we're saying 4 to 6 hours a day. So that's running your campaign if you don't have a strong campaign manager. Mm-hmm. Knocking on doors, which, of course, we live in Arizona. The hottest place to be knocking doors is in the summer. And that's when they're knocking doors. And then they have to come home or go to their campaign office and start dialing their phone for dollars with somebody working with them just saying, no, 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 you don't get to take a break now. Looking at their watch, and we still have 4 hours to go.
And this is the hard pill, I think, for a lot of people is they realize you have to do that yourself. You can't delegate that one.
That is absolutely correct.
Because if you're asking money for your campaign, the donors are entitled to your voice on the other side of
that,
the phone.
That is absolutely correct. So part of the training that you asked about is on endorsements.
Okay.
If you're going for an endorsement, you better show up, not your campaign manager.
We'll get to that next time, but I want to go to candidates first. I was surprised. I thought you were going to say, don't ever run your own campaign. You seem to be a little more ambivalent on that. Don't answer. We don't have the time. We will be back, however. First, we will meet our elected officials. Two folks have been through your program and talk about what was that actually like when we return in just a moment in the Think Tank.
KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, we are back in the Think Tank. We're talking on the subject, so you want to run for office. We've been talking to Beth Meyer, who runs an outfit called Leading for Change, which, among other things, trains candidates. We have two actual graduates of this program who are former participants, currently elected official, Brian Garcia is here. You are a school board member in Tempe, I believe.
Tempe Union, correct.
Okay. And Lorenzo Sierra, you are a state legislator.
Correct.
Okay. I'll throw this out to either of you, whoever sort of is most inspired. Tell me what this was like on your side. When you went through this, was there very much that surprised you? And then when you got into the campaign, what was the biggest surprise that hit you?
So for me, I got to have kind of an insight beforehand. I used to work for then Congresswoman Sinema and worked on her 2012 campaign and kind of got some insight through that. And so when I came to Beth, I'd already taken the fellowship program and then went into candidate training. And that was kind of more eye-opening because it really broke down the nuts and bolts of what exactly we needed to do. As Beth mentioned, you know, it was very important that, you know, are you ready for this? And not only yourself, but is your family ready for this? Because they take a toll and they have a burden, and we want to make sure that we're being respectful of our families as well. And so it really was an eye-opener for myself as well.
Now, I just got to ask, because I always this, when somebody says they're on a school board, I think that has got to be the most thankless job on the face of the earth, because you get some authority, but I think you're at a level where every parent in the world figures they can call you at home at midnight because they're incensed about something. Have you experienced that?
So actually, when I was campaigning and a lot of people advise against this, I put my personal cell phone on my literature because I wanted to be accessible to our families and to our parents. And now still today, being 7 months in, parents are still calling me and asking me questions and, you know, advocating for their student, which is what I wanted in the first place. And I personally love it because I graduated from the district that I went to, from McClintock High School. And my brother just graduated from Corona. And so I have a very personal tie to the community. And, you know, that was the whole point is, you know, no one like me before has ever run for this board. And I thought it was time for someone to start talking about
Like me, meaning what?
Yes. So I'm the first Native American, for example, on the board. I'm a member of the Pascua-Yaqui tribe, which is federally recognized by, you know, the U.S. federal government and the Mexican federal government. Both my parents immigrated to the U.S., my mom from El Salvador, my dad from the Pascua-Yaqui tribe in Mexico. I'm the first one in my family to graduate from high school and go on and get a bachelor's, master's, and now I'm in my third year of law school. And so for me, education is personal. And if it wasn't for my parents sacrificing a lot of time and resources into me, not only myself but also my brother, to actually get to the point where we are, it would be an injustice to them. And so for me, being on the school board is very personal, and I honestly enjoy it a lot, even though we know it gets tense from time to time.
Lorenzo, I want to ask you, and Brian alerted me to one other aspect. I was approaching this as if this was your first foray into politics. In Brian's case, it was not. He was a worker on another campaign. Prior to being involved in this, were you involved in campaigns?
You know, before I got I was in Beth's legacy program, which she just mentioned, the Center for Progressive Leadership. And before then, I sort of took a different route than most politicians because I really didn't have a background. I volunteered here and there for a couple of campaigns, but I had a Fortune 500 career. Was working in business and doing several board opportunities. And my wife and I talked about, what is it that we really want out of life and what do we want to be doing with the opportunities that we've been given and with the blessings that we've been giving.
And I just infer from the gray hair that you're in a somewhat different place in life cycle than your colleague here.
I'm in a little bit different place. So I think in terms of political age, he's probably a little older than I am. But it was something that we consciously decided as a family that this is what I want to be doing. And I believe we could do it well and we can serve the people well. So I did Beth's program. And so that was my first foray, and I got to meet a lot of people. One of the things that her legacy program did, and I think that she still does, is they assign you a mentor. My mentor was former minority leader Chad Campbell, who, in fact, I had a phone call with today, who has, even after the obligation of that program, has continued to help shepherd me through this process of going from I was first a city councilman in Avondale, and now at the state legislature. And, I don't know that I'd be here without Beth's program.
Were you in the program prior to running for city council?
Correct, yes. Mm-hmm. So I was in the program before I was in city council. And like everyone else, I had to get over my fear of asking people for money. And as the years have gone by, I did this in 2011. And it is much easier to make those calls now. And I think it came to the point to where if I'm asking for myself, yeah, that's really hard. But if I'm asking on behalf of the people I'm serving, at which point I have no shame in asking for resources for the people that I represent. So if I think about it that way, it makes all the call time and all the asking for money so much easier if I know that this is a reflection of what I'm going to be doing for the people I serve.
Let me take you back to the onset of the first campaign.
Sure.
What surprised you about what it was like running for office?
Yeah, I think part of it was when you knock on the door and folks, you would ask folks, you know, hey, I'm here to answer any question you may have. And I think they were just trying to get you out as fast as they would if you were there trying to sell a vacuum cleaner.
Well, sure. They don't know, A, who you are, but B, you don't know where you hit them in their life.
Exactly.
Quite literally, the pot may be boiling over in the next room.
Right. And so I think it So I went in trying to give my entire resume every time I knocked on a door and someone was gracious enough to open and have a conversation with me. I've since learned if I can get my spiel down to about 30 seconds and let them do most of the talking, I think that works out much better. And
okay, let me put you on the spot. You got 30 seconds. Give me your spiel.
So I would knock on a door and I'd say, hi, I'm Lorenzo Sierra. I am your state representative here. I'm working very hard for you. And what can I do to make your life better?
That's under 30 seconds. I like that even better than 30. 30 seconds sounded long. That was closer to 12. And I thought it was right. It was great.
Well, I think people, by and large, they just want to be heard, and they want to, especially when you get someone, Brian, I'm sure you've had this, where you knock on someone's door when as a candidate, and they may say, this is the first time anyone's ever come to talk to me. Mm-hmm. And that is eye-opening. In this last election, between myself individually, my seatmates Lupe Contreras and Diego Espinosa and our team, I think we knocked on about 15,000 doors in our district. So it was really important for us to have that one-to-one connection at however we could do that. And the three of us always continually are at community events and making sure that our community knows that we're there for them and because of them. So it has been an amazing adventure, and I don't think I would have traded it for anything.
Brian, how do you get over the issue, the compunction that I think most of us have about asking for money?
I mean, I was completely terrified because similar to Beth is, you know, my family very much advocated against asking for money. You do not ask anyone for money. We will figure it out. We'll, you know, get by. And that was the biggest challenge and barrier for me in running for office. And interesting enough, I would tell my dad, who unfortunately passed away from pancreatic cancer in May, but he would actually go to his coworkers and say, hey, this is what we're doing as a family. We want to advocate for a community. We haven't had a voice in the community for a while, and do you mind helping us out? And so it wasn't just myself asking for money at that point, because other people were invested.
Hey, you know what? You're his kid. I think that's easier for him than it is for you.
Well, absolutely. I mean,
you can ask for your kid.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And the part of it is that, you know, we have been involved in the community in different ways. For example, he was very much in Little League for my brother, and I used to be a vocal performer, and so he would go to them. But at the same time, I would, when I'm knocking on doors, yeah, that was easier for me, especially when it's 110 degrees outside. People are asking, why in the world are you knocking on doors at this time of day? And it's actually easier because people want to ask that, and they offer water or what have you, and so it's nicer to have a conversation. But I think once you provide a vision, like Beth mentioned, about what it exactly you want to do, people, it perks their ears, especially when it's the first time that you're talking to them. And it's a way easier way of engaging them, and when you're asking them for money, because they want to invest in you, but they're like, all right, what are we investing in? And if you don't give them kind of the exact vision that you're trying to convey, then, you know, you're going to lose those folks and potentially to your opponent, and you're not getting to what you're exactly, you know, intending to do.
Did you count how many doors you knocked down?
Oh, gosh. Oh, wait.
Let me first of all put in context, your district, Tempe Union District, is ballpark the north half of Tempe.
So Tempe Union High School District includes obviously the city, the entire city of Tempe, little sliver of South Phoenix, Ahwatukee, West Chandler.
So it includes Guadalupe, Kyrene is a feeder school.
Yeah, both Tempe Elementary and Kyrene.
It's the combination of Tempe and Kyrene,
exactly.
Elementary district.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so it's twice as big as
Yeah, so we have about 160,000 voters.
Shame on me, I live in
there. So we have about 160,000 voters. That includes Guadalupe and the Gila River Indian community. It's mm-hmm. very diverse. I mean, we have a third Democratic, Independent, Republican.
Well, Tempe's a swing
yeah.
area.
Yeah, but, you know, North Tempe doesn't turn out as much. And so mm-hmm. the main reliable folks that turn out are Ahwatukee and South Tempe. And mm-hmm. so, you know, when you're looking at something like this, you need to be very cognizant about, you know, the communities you're intending to serve and being honest with them. So
is the school board partisan or nonpartisan?
It is nonpartisan.
Nonpartisan.
Yeah, as it should be.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We will be back with our candidates, Brian Garcia, Lorenzo Sienna, and Beth Meyer, when we return in just a moment to wrap this in the Think Tank.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, we have been talking to Brian Garcia, who is a member of the Tempe Union High School Tempe Union High School District. Shame on me, I live in that district. Lorenzo Sierra, who is a Arizona State representative representing, I think it's District 19.
Correct. Avondale, Tolleson, and Southwest Phoenix.
Okay. That'd be like Levine?
A little bit of Levine and a little bit of Maryvale.
Is that becoming less rural, Levine? Is that
getting... Yes, very much so.
Okay. It was this farm community in the middle of the city until very recently.
As was Avondale.
Just a stream of thought, consciousness thought, having nothing to do with anything we're talking about. But Beth, you said that when you bring people in, you ask them three questions. Tell us what they are.
We tell them three questions that we believe everybody, including ourselves, you, Mike, and myself, that when we're talking to people, we are subconsciously asking ourselves three questions. So this is really heavy duty for the candidate, which is the first question is, do you know what you're talking about? Right. So we've met a lot of people in our lives that are talking to us and all you're hearing is wah, 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 because you're not getting through. Because we.
Are you asking, are they knowledgeable or what?
It's a matter of knowledgeable. It's a matter of how they express themselves. It's a matter of what their passion is. It's a matter of knowing what their vision of change is and why. So why is that important? So do you know what you're really talking about? So when Brian was knocking on doors to get elected to the school board, those people really want to feel safe if they're going to give him support. That he knows what he's talking about, that he knows what the issues are, and hopefully has some stories to share with it so we don't put people to sleep. We have a phrase at Leading for Change, which is facts raise eyebrows, but stories can change minds. Both are very important things. So the first question is, do you know what you're talking about? The second question that we believe and that you and I again do ourselves when somebody's talking to us is, why should I trust you? So it's really hard, as Lorenzo said, when he was knocking on doors and he had to bring it down to under 30 seconds, they have to be able to exude something that makes the person feel like I can trust him without giving them his 16-page resume. So the first
question.
What
I got out of his short introduction, by the way, is I'm here to listen. What's your problem? That is totally disarming. And I think a very great way to begin any conversation.
Exactly. It makes you kind of trust him almost right off the bat.
Without knowing anything about him.
Exactly. Yeah,
well, I do know something. Right. I do know he at least professes to want to hear from me. And I'm pretty important. So that's I'm pretty important to me anyway. And so that's a very gratifying thing to hear.
Right. And then the last question is, what you're thinking, you and I are thinking in our minds is, why should I support you now? And so when you are a candidate, why should I support you now relates to more than one thing, which is, why should I give you money now? Why should I volunteer for you now? And building a volunteer base is not as easy as many people think. And then why should I vote for you? So those are the three questions that we believe people are subconsciously thinking when you are presenting yourselves to them, and you have to get that across to them, whether it's in a debate, whether it's at a house party, whether it's over the phone, or whether it's knocking on the door, even if it's in a direct mail piece. If you're not addressing those, we all know what we do with old mail the next day.
So, Brian, Lorenzo, do you feel like you had a good answer to that question when you walked into her program?
I believe I learned it. I think part of it was I came in with a lot of board, community board experience on a lot of nonprofits, even some big ones. But as I grew as a candidate and as a servant, I saw where my weaknesses were. For example, in every candidate talks about jobs. Especially a couple of years ago, jobs was the big thing. So I took it upon myself to even know more about workforce development so that even at the door, if someone said, well, my son's looking for a job and this other person's looking for a job, I would give them the resources that they needed right there and then to say, okay, here's who you're going to call. Tell them I told you to call, and they'll get you they'll get your son some training or get them into a program to where they can find somewhere to work. So it's actually walking the walk when you're talking about those things. I needed finance experience, so I got onto the board of a local credit union and probably know more about finance than I've ever wanted to know. But it's taking those risks and those jumps to make sure that you're giving the people that you're privileged to serve the best possible representation.
Brian, how do you feel about your ability to answer those questions the day you walked in?
I mean, the first thing that Beth told me is to slow down. I talked way too fast and focused way too much on data and not enough on personal stories. And I think that's ultimately what helped me earn a seat on the school board, was because we really connected with the personal stories of our family members in the community. And that, at the end of the day, is the most powerful thing that anyone running for office could do.
I think the mistake everybody makes is we try to talk to people in a way that would appeal to ourselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, I say this as I'm a data analytic guy, and that's my default start, and that isn't always necessarily the best way to communicate, unless you're talking to somebody very much like yourself.
Yes, exactly.
Which is a sliver.
Yeah.
So what I'd like to ask each of you, if you were to talk, you got somebody knocks on your door and says, I'm thinking of running for office, not yours, but some other one. What will be the biggest takeaway that you would give them?
Well, for example, if they're running for my school board, and there are a number of folks that are planning on doing that right now, is, you know, why specifically our school board, and why is it that you want to do on the school board? Because granted, we don't get paid. Granted, the minimum requirement is for you to show up to our board meetings, but that shouldn't be the only thing that you do. Granted, myself and other board members are constantly out in the community. I just came back from orientation for one of our high schools. And today we have a grand reopening in Guadalupe for one of our feeder schools. And so it's really about being engaged in the community as much as you can, rather than just showing up to do, you know, vote on the business. It's more about engaging and really being there as much as you can. Because if not, then most of the board members that will be on there, you know, for a while, we'll lose touch with the reality of what we're struggling with.
Okay, well, thank you both. I told Beth she'd have a few seconds here at the end to tell us what's upcoming with their program.
Our next program actually starts in January. Mm-hmm. So it's real simple. Your listeners can go to azleadingforchange.org, and there's information right there on the candidate training. I invite you to have the courage and to step into that leadership if you're even considering running for office, whether it's 2020 or 10 years down the road, to prepare yourselves, because we need to create a democracy that's reflective of all of our communities.
Well, that's a good conclusion. Thank you very much, Beth Meyer, Brian Garcia, Lorenzo Sierra. Good luck to all of you.
Thank you so much.
Keep taking those calls. We'll see you next week in the Think Tank.